Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Product Chat, a Do the Woo podcast show. Woo! Woo! We'd like to thank our sponsor, Kensta, who offers you and your clients a high-performance hosting platform with managed WordPress hosting, powered by Google Cloud, ensuring fast load times and robust security. I'll tell you more about Kensta later in the show, but let's get into the conversation.
Hey, and welcome to Do the Woo. I'm Katie Keith, founder and CEO at Barn2 Plugins, and this is the first time I have done Woo Product Chat on Do the Woo, because I was on the Biz Chat last year with Marcus Burnett. So now I'm here with co-host James Kemp from Woo. Hey, James.
Hey, Katie. Yeah, I'm James Kemp, like you said, and I'm from WooCommerce. I am the core product manager at WooCommerce. And yeah, this is also technically my first Woo product chat for Do the Woo. I've done a few podcasts for Do the Woo around stuff that we're doing at WooCommerce, and they've now shifted over to the Inside Woo podcast. So here, yeah, we really want to focus on product a lot more and just topics around working on products and things like that. So today we have a special guest, which I'm sure many of you WooCommerce people know, and even Shopify now, is Bryce Adams of Metoric. And I'm pretty sure I said that right.
Perfect, yeah. Thank you so much for the intro, James. Yeah, you pronounced it perfectly. That's who I am. I've been working with Woo, I suppose, 10 years now, almost 10 years or something, or maybe more than that. And
that's right.
Worked at Woo. That was really fun. Joined Automattic as part of that, and then went out to do Metric back in 2016. So almost 10 years ago, or almost 9 years ago. And I've been doing that since, and yeah. Really enjoy thinking about product, talking about product. So appreciate the invite.
Yeah, no worries. We, I think we connected pretty early on into your journey.
Yeah. Well, you were on your journey as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think we were both on our own and met. Yeah.
I think I just started Iconic at the time. I had some plugins, but I kind of officially rebranded as Iconic.
Yeah.
And yeah, we got in touch. And it's always been pretty useful talking to you.
Oh, no, I've enjoyed it. I mean, I remember talking with you about Setteri back in the days, the SaaS product you were working on. And it was really fun to like kind of share some of the experiences I've had doing a Woo SaaS with someone who was also building that. And yeah, pretty cool to see it grow over the years.
Yeah, it's not mine anymore, but I handed it over to a friend that was working on it as well. It's a cool product. It's advancing since I left.
That's
it,
awesome.
So that's good. Katie, do you want to dive into one of our, or kind of set the scene for what our topic is?
Yeah, so each time we're going to be talking about a particular topic that is relevant to WordPress product owners. So we thought we would start with feature creep because that affects everybody. What is the scope of your products and when is it appropriate to add a feature and grow your product, and when should you say no and stay focused? So Bryce, why do you think this is such a challenge that causes problems for WordPress product developers?
Well, I think it's just, you know, we're, as developers, I think we're very tempted by like new shiny things. And that even is true with features that we won't even use, just features we're building for people. And I think it's very, you get that dopamine rush from making something new. And sometimes that extends to probably why so many founders end up becoming serial founders and creating multiple companies on multiple products, because they're addicted to that rush you get from putting something new out in the world. And iterating is a lot, I find, more rewarding, but it's harder and you don't get that instant rush. So I think that's why we see so much feature creep, because it's like, it's kind of like a developer scratching their own itch and it's a cycle where they just keep doing it and stop actually taking care of the features that they've built.
I think it can be a bit more than that as well. On top of that, once you've got some adoption and you have a customer that comes forward and says, oh, I wish it did this. It's hard to, if the feature seems exciting to you, it's hard to just say no, even though only one customer has asked for it.
Yeah, because you know it's possible as well. That's the, I think, the thrill of it, especially when it's your own product.
Yeah, maybe that is a good idea.
Like, why not?
Yeah, I see that all the time. It's particularly when founders are doing customer support, they're too close to it. Yeah, and so they just want to help that one customer. If you have support engineers, that creates a layer between it and protects you from yourself.
That's a pretty good lesson. Well, I think it also helps, like, if support engineers are the ones that are ultimately like seeing the frequency of a request, while as a founder, you might just see that one request and say, oh, we should just do that. But you didn't see the three other requests that were ignored that were similar and could have also been solved with that time. So it didn't end up being the most effective problem to solve.
How do you handle that? I assume you have support agents that filter your requests as they come in.
Yeah, well, I think for sure. Our team's small. There's five of us, including me, working on the product in that way. And we all have that role of support. It's not like a specific person's role. Some end up doing it more than others, depending on the week or if someone's away. But ultimately, like, support's probably the first priority in any of our roles. And then everything else kind of feeds down through that, which I think is a dangerous way to do it. In that, like, if you take Katie's example, I'm in there doing support, and some days I'll see a ticket come in and I just build the feature and ship it straight away. And I don't even stop to think, could this have repercussions or is this the best use of my time today? And it's probably more that than the repercussions. I think, you know, small features in themselves don't always create bigger problems, but they do take away your time. Whether it's even just an hour or 2 hours, it's time that perhaps wasn't spent on the most effective thing you could have been doing. So that's a risk. But with five of us, I think we managed to work well together, where if we see an issue, we try to have like a process. So for us, it's like linear. You know, we've used probably every other issue task tracking app before, but we're now on linear and really enjoying it since it's so developer and product focused. And we'll go in there and create an issue, any one of us. And that's after we've already, you know, talked to each other in the support ticket to actually clarify, is there something here or is this just an issue that can be solved with support? Because if we can just solve the issue by having a conversation with the customer or potentially giving them advice on how to fix something on their end or fixing something on our end, we can save that whole development process. And that's always like an ideal outcome for me. I think I'm trying to treat support as like, yeah, trying to solve it through support, not rushing to just get the tools out and start hacking away at it to try to solve it that way. But yeah, if it does become an issue, if it does become an issue, we do end up getting it into linear. It's in like a triage status. So if anyone else goes in to create that issue, it's there, or they'll search for it and find it somewhere else. But then that kind of gives us an opportunity to have all the new issues surface, but then decide which ones we tackle based on the frequency or ease or what else we've got going on.
Is that a private system? So it's not public facing?
Yeah, no, completely private. And I think, yeah, I've seen that open roadmap kind of approach or open, you know, ideas forums. And I used one at one point maybe 6 years ago, 7 years ago, where people could submit those requests and then see it publicly. And I think there's so much benefit to doing that. But when it comes to like day-to-day bug fixing or working on some core feature, like, I want to do that in privacy, but also, I feel like then I don't want my customers to be too concerned with my priorities because they only have a view into what they need while we have a view into what everyone needs.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's true. At Barn 2, we have a private feature request list, which is very large because it's for each product. And I do use that all the time to prioritize what features to build. So I look at it's not just the number of votes, it's also the difficulty and the impact. So we have like a formula that it's just a spreadsheet. The team hate it. They would rather use a public feature request board. But I actually believe that feature requests are kind of commercially sensitive information because
so true.
If a competitor knows that you've got lots of feature requests for a particular thing and you don't have the capacity to build it yet, that might sit there for a while. I don't want the competitors to know and copy that. But James, I suspect you have a different view on this because you used to have a feature request plugin which made it public.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of founders building too many tools, I built a feature request plugin specifically while I was running Iconic, which was a WooCommerce plugin shop. I wanted a place to collect feature requests and somewhere to be able to guide people to say, you know, go here to submit a feature request. And then also to, this was probably before we had many support people. I think it was maybe just me and another developer. We just wanted a place to store those feature requests. I do agree with you regarding if it's public and a feature sat there for ages, then it does become, you know, data for some competitor to build out that feature into their product, which honestly, WooCommerce itself used to have an ideas board, and I would I would scan that to see.
It used to be a great idea for product ideas.
I built plugins from that. Our first plugin was from that.
That was even the case back in the day before Automattic, like where we would, as some of us at Woohoo would build plugins on the side, we'd get ideas from there as well. If it wasn't a priority for the company, it made sense for someone else to build it so that people could actually get it.
Yeah, and that disappeared, I'm not sure when, a year or so ago. There is a feature request board still, though, for WooCommerce, but it's not as easy to find, but it does exist.
Well, I mean, and on that note, we have the same thing in our app where if you're logged in and you're in the app, we have a roadmap section, which is
right. Just, yes.
We're not directing a lot of attention to it, but we hope that if people are wondering what are the big things that we're going to work on, they can see it there. Because a lot of times it's not out of a place of I need this, but rather this would be cool. And you do want to support that desire in customers, like that feature might come one day. If it is something you might do, it's good to help them with their planning because they also might not need it in immediately, but they might want it in 6 months or a year. And it's nice to know it's coming.
Yeah, we've been discussing similar at WooCommerce because we don't really have a public roadmap of, you know, things that we're working on, things that are coming up. It's one of my goals this year to get something like that available. But I don't think it will be like a typical roadmap with like dates of this is when things are coming. Maybe it will be, but more of like an open vision of these are the things we're working on this year, without the pressure and disappointment of deadlines that probably won't get hit.
But that's also useful, not even just to users, right, but also to the developers that build on Woo, because they can start to get an idea of, okay, Woo is going to work on this feature, I might give that a pass. Or they're going to build this, this could be a product I could build that would enhance that feature. And then that roadmap starts to even really benefit customers later when they're like using extensions built for products that Woo's working on.
Yeah, for sure. Something I think we missed in this chat is just explaining what Metric is, what it does. I think that'd be useful context.
Yeah. Well, I think, and it kind of leads to something I was going to say before, when you were talking about your products and James with Iconic before, like, I think we have one advantage in that Metric is just one single product that we work on. And it does help with that focus. But yeah, for context, Metric is a analytics and email automation app for WooCommerce and Shopify stores. And most of our customers use it just because it gives them a lot more control over the data that they're generating every day with their store, but also gives them these tools to like actually action that data and then try to get more orders or improve parts of their shop. I've been doing it for 8.5 years now.
So that's a really nice, succinct way that you defined it. Do you use that vision to know when to add a feature or not in terms of scope creep? Do you ever think this just isn't part of the vision or the scope?
Yeah, I suppose if it's not analytics related or not email automation related, we do start to wonder, is this necessary?
Do you get those feature requests even?
Sure. Oh, we get the most, you know, one-off feature requests that could only benefit one person on that day of the week. But we get it. You know. Yeah. And I think that's because we're pretty responsive. And if you contact us, you'll always get talk to one of us that could actually build it. So there's that hope that customers have, which I think is healthy, but it also does lead to a lot of, can you build this for us? And it's a very clear no. And a lot of the times it's that they just have a specific need with their business. Like a store might sell a food product that comes in weight, grams and kilos, and then they want to analyze that data so they can see the average kilogram sold or something like that, which is, I'm sure, would be an amazing feature for them, and it would be really useful for anyone else in that boat. But if we start to look at how many of our users have food products with weight, it might only be 3%, 4%. And then you'll start to wonder, we're like doing sales reporting. We're not meant to be doing maybe reporting on weights to do with their stock. It just starts to be like that creep into like what our core focus is.
Have you found a good way to say no in a positive way that isn't, going to upset?
I think that's a good question. Yeah. Look, the easy way is you can just say, yeah, maybe one day. And that's never necessarily a lie if it is a maybe. But I do want to be pretty honest with people, because in the past, maybe when I was more optimistic in the first couple of years, I'd say, yeah, for sure, one day, and realized I can't do everything. And even growing a team, you as a team can't do everything. And rather, you shouldn't do everything. So over the years, I've tried to be a bit more honest, because it does lead to disappointment if you're not. And if something I know is like out of the question, I'll sometimes just say straight away, like, I can be really honest with you, this is not going to happen. If you need this, you should use something else, but try to still save that and offer them another part of the product that could be useful or another way to get to what they need. But also sometimes, like, depending on their attitude, like, I do want to make them understand why. And it's like using that example from before and saying, I get that this would really benefit you, and I know it could be business or life changing for you, but we have, and I'll say the number sometimes, I'll say that, we have 3,000 plus other customers that we need to worry about and that are paying us. So we don't just have responsibility to you, we have it to everyone, and that's why. And if someone doesn't really understand it at that point, they're never going to, like, they've made their mind up.
Yeah. Yeah, we do something very similar. We're often very open about why we won't do something. We will often give numbers. So say we have got 200 items on the feature request list. You are the second person who's requested this. The top item has 56 votes. So therefore, we have to do the thing with 56 votes and just be honest with them. But it's also about giving them alternatives. And I think there's lots of ways to do that. It might be recommending another product that works alongside your product, like a complimentary plugin from another company. We even do that with affiliate links and things. So if, say, you can use our lead time plugin with Iconic's delivery slots plugin and they want to select a delivery slot, then we would send an affiliate link to that Iconic plugin. And another thing is that we've recently introduced a customization service, which is proving quite popular, where if it is technically possible to do something as a customization, like building on top of our plugins, then we will ask if they want a quote for that. And often they are willing to pay for it.
That's great. I think that's a good way to solve it, where you're saying, if I was, and it's like a bit of empathy and saying, if I was in their position and I needed that feature, I know that Bantu aren't going to build that. But if customizing is a way to solve it, at least you're giving them the easiest path to get to that.
Yeah, I guess that's trickier in your product, right? because you can't really, being a SaaS product, you can't really customize it.
Yeah, and I think where it's a bit different to plugins, in that we're a SaaS, we're like a service you use, and we do have a plugin, but it's a very small part of what we do. I mean, not being a WordPress or Woo plugin does have its advantages. And I think it's actually one of the best decisions I made early on, was to go that route and really like go all in on it, even though definitely back in 2016, it was a more difficult path. Like if I made Metric into a Woo plugin that you could just install, I probably would have had as much revenue in the first few months of launching it as I got from the SaaS over the next couple of years. But then a SaaS, because you've got this recurring revenue model, and the way that you get to iterate on a SaaS makes it well worth it in the long run. But it does complicate it sometimes as well.
Yeah, definitely.
If you are looking for hosting via cloud servers for your client sites, consider checking out Kinsta. With their container technology, you are assured of no shared resources. Plus, you get global CDN, edge caching, and Cloudflare Enterprise for all your sites. It doesn't stop there, though. Auto backup, staging, plug-in vulnerability alerts, and uptime monitoring comes with 24/7 support that you can expect from humans. Add to this, for agencies, look into their partner programs with some nice extras, plus an account manager and custom plans to meet the needs of your client's sites. All this and more, just head over to kinsta.com.
So, James, I think that this is an interesting topic for WooCommerce at the moment, because your actual role at the moment is largely to increase the scope of the core product, isn't it, with the more in core and everything? So how are you kind of navigating those decisions, given that you're meant to be enlarging it, but obviously don't want to go crazy with it?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. And obviously everyone has opinions on what should and shouldn't be in core. I think our goal is that core should, and this is core WooCommerce, not core WordPress, should serve the majority of users, or, and specifically, you know, the target users that we're focusing on. And I think that's the driving kind of factor of what we choose to roll into core. So if anyone's not aware, what we're looking at is a lot of our premium plugins that currently, you know, if you want back in stock notifications, for example, you have to pay for an extension to get that, and shipment tracking and things like that, which are fairly minimal but essential features. And those are the kinds of features that we're looking to roll into core, just to have that, you know, base offering, and then allow people to extend on top of that.
Yeah, well, I think...
Go on, Bryce.
Just using like brands as an example, right, where you're bringing that into core, that's like as a plugin, we found, being a SaaS, we found that the WooCommerce stores were working with 40, 50%, I don't remember the exact number, but a large majority were using the brand's plugin on their site. And we've noticed that because people were asking for brand related features or reporting. And this is going back several years now, but we confirmed it with the data that majority of customers did use the brand's plugin and had that data. So it made sense for us to build a feature on top of that. And that's been really useful to stores, but we wouldn't have done it if it was only used by like 5 or 10% of stores. But the advantage when you bring that into core is that like maybe that number becomes 70 or 80% or more, and other products can like extend it and help benefit the core user as well.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the key things to consider is that, and it kind of goes back to your like weight of goods scenario.
Yeah.
That WooCommerce can kind of serve so many different types of businesses that we don't want to merge in like very specific niche features into core. So yeah, the process is actually similar to what you were saying, Katie, with you know, like a formula based spreadsheet essentially as a guiding factor. So I'm looking at the kind of usage data of each of our Woo owned plugins in the marketplace, And also adding to that list features that we don't have plugins for, like sequential order IDs and MPN numbers. Recently, we did GTIN numbers as part of the product data. So things like that as well go into this spreadsheet that I'm looking at, with usage data in our target customer, but also across the board, you know, versus how many stores there are, how many stores are actually using these plugins. We'll, of course, take revenue into consideration as well for some of those plugins. Competitor analysis is part of that equation. You know, if every competitor has it in their core offering and we don't, then I think that's a good signal that we probably should. And then on top of that, kind of manual data points, like how complex is the support for this product? What kind of impact will this have on merchants? Like how happy will they be if we implement this feature? And all that kind of stuff that will eventually give me a priority score to use as a basis. I think there'll be some cases where there's maybe a plugin that's got high priority, but it just wouldn't make sense in core. And I think there's a bit of a gut check at that point. But yeah, that's...
What's an example of that, like subscriptions or something along those lines?
Subscriptions, yeah. Product add-ons is in the list.
Bundling.
Bundles, I think, could be a core thing. Add-ons, I'm not convinced about.
Yeah, it's interesting. Where do you draw the line? It's so difficult.
I mean, bundles we already kind of have.
Yeah, and I think like maybe it's like a light version of those features where someone can get value out of it. But yeah, if you want to take it to the extra level with customizing it and having mix and match pricing and custom options, like that's where I think you have to think, is this core or is this a plugin? And it's to everyone's benefit, because if it's part of the core product and it's free, it's going to get limited attention. Like you can't have a developer working on it full time if it doesn't make any money.
Yeah, exactly.
On that specific feature, it's not going to be viable.
Yeah, I think the tricky thing is at this point is navigating the kind of the third party extensions that maybe offer these features. And I think, like you say, anything we put in will probably be like a light version. You know, it won't be advanced niche functionality, but it will be the basics that will serve 80% of the target customer. And then the goal in my mind is that, and I'm, you know, coming from being a third party developer, I know it's not as easy as it sounds, but that those developers would then base their plugins on top of the core functionality. But we're also implementing ways to turn off. So like brands you can turn off, for example. But it's, yeah.
I think
there's kind of like a dilemma around that. Like, do we want it to be able to be turned off? Or like, is this, should we be more opinionated and say like, this is the way you have to do it?
Well, it's WordPress, so you'll never have the final say. Like, there's always a way.
And you've got backward compatibility problems. So if WooCommerce was just being launched now, then fine, put brands in. If you don't use that taxonomy, that's up to you. But that people might have to disable it if there's a conflict with the slug, for example, and things like that.
Yeah, exactly, which has been coming up.
I've seen that in the last day or so, yeah.
But I think ultimately that's on the, like, the developers that are building products around it need it. Try to embrace it, like, and not fight it. And I'm thinking, like, with our integration with brands, like in the past it worked with the brands plugin, the official one. Then there were some other third parties making popular brand plugins, so we made sure ours worked with that. Then we brought into core, so we added support for that. Then someone said, well, I just want to set an attribute called brand on the product, so we added support for that. You can't, as a developer, like, extending these products, you shouldn't be too opinionated on what the right way to do something is. I think you have to adapt, because that's how you help your customers in the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think that's the risk of building on top of a platform like WordPress. You know, that there's always going to be risk that whatever you build could be put into core in some way. But yeah, I think there's probably some messaging around, like specifically talking to this brand's issue where there has been some slug conflicts. I think maybe we should be encouraging these developers, third-party developers, a bit more to, you know, use the test releases and check everything works and come to us with issues before it's fully rolled out. We could probably be a bit more proactive about that. I think we do release announcements when those go out, but I'm not sure that we directly email marketplace vendors, for example. Maybe we could.
It's like you almost need someone to be play the devil's advocate and just sit there and think, what could go wrong with this? What part of this could backfire? Yeah,
and I mean, that did happen. So Brands specifically was tested against, you know, all of the most popular Brands plugins. But there's always going to be things that you miss when it's rolled out at the scale that it's rolled out.
Yeah, and ultimately, like, some blame has to be placed on both, like, the developer and Woo in that situation, because the developer could have tested it. And we'll try to test things when we see the announcements on the Woo blog, but we'll also sometimes miss something. And if the announcement was there and we missed it, I can be bothered, but I can also look at how to not let that happen again. And it's very clear, like, read the announcement. I need to test it, implement it. Otherwise, you've got to deal with the consequences of that.
And that's a pretty obvious one, isn't it? They are literally building the same thing into core.
You might want to check it.
Someone owns a brand plugin is likely to miss. And there was notice of it in advance, wasn't there?
Yeah, but I mean, I think there's definitely issues that crop up once something like that is rolled out at scale. So it did have a phased rollout, actually, Brands. It was, I think it was like 10%, 50%, and then 100% of users that got it.
That's awesome. But that's an improvement in itself, like doing it in those incremental ways and trying to catch things. Like, even if it doesn't work, at least you're going about a better process to do it.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, that's my method. it's experimental at the moment, but yeah, I think that, and I guess part of that method as well will be, you know, when I and the team have an idea of, okay, these are the features that we want to roll in, I would likely take that to some sort of public platform to get feedback on it before we do anything. And yeah, I think that's important. I like I say, I think there's always going to be a split of opinions. And I think you have to figure out how to take those opinions on board and validate, you know, the correct ones, which is tricky to navigate.
Mm-hmm. Well, the ones that also fit with your goals as an organization over the next few years.
Yes, yeah.
Because, yeah, it's like often a feature helps one person in one moment, but you as the builder of that have to live with that, the consequences of that decision forever. And oftentimes I've got features I find that I added 6 years ago for one customer and they've long gone. Like, they canceled 3 years ago and that feature's not being used by anyone. And you wonder, it's like you gave birth to something that you have to keep taking care of and they've just abandoned it. They've stopped paying. It's your responsibility. Yeah.
There is that. It's interesting the different decision-making factors when you're running a whole ecosystem like WooCommerce versus just a standalone plugin or something, because, like, nobody is particularly threatened by a new feature that I might add. I mean, there'll be competing plugins that have that feature, but it's absolutely not the same scale. But one thing I do that's a bit different is look for opportunities that where a feature doesn't fit within the scope of the plugin that the customer is using, maybe that's an opportunity to develop a whole new product. And I've done that several times. Like, most recently, we've got a product options plugin, which is basically product add-ons, which hopefully won't get added to core. And lots of customers, like more customers than any other feature request, wanted a live preview. So customer uploads an image and it appears on the picture of the T-shirt or something like that. And we thought, well, that's actually a really big feature to add to the core plugin. And while a lot of people are asking, we didn't believe it was the majority of people that want product options, because you've got all sorts of use cases like pizza toppings and things where the customer's not uploading an image and doesn't need to preview anything. So we thought, okay, well, let's do that as an add-on. We could have done it as a separate plugin, but the fields are provided by the core plugin. So we did it as an optional add-on.
You're creating your own ecosystem now.
Mm. Hopefully one day, let it grow. Yeah. So the core, and that also allows you to give people a choice of pricing. So if that use case is nothing to do with them, they can buy the plugin on its own, product options. And if they want live previews, then they buy it with the add-on, which is a bit more expensive. So we kind of help to keep the main product lightweight without adding that extra feature, which could add bloat for people that don't need it.
Yeah, and it might lead to wanting to increase the cost of that product. So people are paying for a feature they don't need then as well.
Yeah, exactly, which could lose sales from the majority who didn't want that feature.
I think the mooring core initiative is slightly the opposite of that, actually. In that a lot of feedback that we hear is people saying, you know, we want to set up a WooCommerce store, but we have to then go and buy all these extra things to make it actually work for us. Which I think is a fair point for things that you would expect an e-commerce platform to offer, like shipment tracking, I think is a massive one. So yeah, there's a balancing act there, I think, to figure out, you know, I think it comes back to the adoption of a specific feature. If it's very niche, like your image upload thing, is only going to apply to people making, you know, personalized products, I would guess. Then yeah, that's definitely should be a parameter that you consider.
Yeah, I think it's largely that if it's a whole ecosystem like an e-commerce platform or a memberships plugin, an LMS, something like that, then people want as much as possible in core for maximum value for money. Whereas my plugins are already an add-on on top of the ecosystem WooCommerce. So it's a slightly different model.
Yeah, it's funny actually, because obviously WooCommerce is on top of WordPress, then your plugin's on top of WooCommerce, and then you've now got plugins on top of your plugin.
The poor user, and we wonder why people say, oh, Shopify is easy to use.
Yeah.
It's a shame, because we can't change that, can we? It is distributed in that way.
You've got to find the good in it. Like the fact that we can do that and that doesn't happen on Shopify is perhaps one of the strengths of Woo. Like that, it's just so easy for all these plugins to like mingle together and enhance each other in different ways.
Yeah, for sure.
Flexibility.
I think it is a key reason why WordPress is where it is, because you can extend it so like granularly in that way. I think perhaps the challenge is how do we make it easier to find these plugins, or, you know, these add-ons, and to enable them where the person is, rather than having to go off and search and find specific things and then download and then upload. And, you know, I think the process of actually finding, particularly like from the WooCommerce marketplace, many WooCommerce users wouldn't even know that that was a thing. And they'd probably just go and Google and maybe the marketplace comes up. So yeah, I think there's some work that could be done around making or discoverability, essentially.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Cool.
You all stopped.
Yeah, I think we've covered a lot of ground, right? And I think we're approaching time. So unless anyone else had any additional thoughts on avoiding feature creep, I think we kind of stepped in and out of the conversation of feature creep. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we went a bit off track at the end, but I think we covered it comprehensively.
I think it's interesting the different challenges of feature creep in the plugin ecosystem versus feature creep in the hosted like SaaS ecosystem.
I think you're just, the battle's kind of with yourself rather than with the customers or with the ecosystem or anything.
It's just, for sure.
And that's great because it comes with that autonomy and choice and all those things. But yeah, ultimately, I think it's just like anything with your business, but approaching each feature request or each idea, I always try to just look at it and say, what is the upside and what is the downside of adding this? And the downside is often very clear. It's time. It's potential risk if that feature have to maintain it in the future. So the upside can be like helping a lot of customers. And I think it's just being aware of what good and what bad can come from each feature and having like a really holistic view of it, because even something that can be really good for customers, if you start to weigh up all the cons of it and it's going to create, you know, all these issues and it's an integration, so it involves getting like permission from another third party, and if it has all those extra steps, it could outweigh it. So you need to be looking at like both sides of the equation.
Agreed. Well, yeah, it's been awesome having you on, Bryce.
Thanks for having me.
Hopefully you can join us for another one at some point in the future.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Cool. Well, thanks, everyone. See you next time.
Bye. Thank you.
Hey, Bob WP again. Thank you for listening, and thanks to our sponsor, Kinsta. If you've yet to subscribe, you can find us on your favorite pod app, on the Fediverse, and to get all things Do The Woo at dothewoo.io/subscribe. And lastly, watch out for our newsletter that'll be soon coming to your inbox, hopefully, with tips for you to take action on as a builder. Until the next time, take care.